27-7 on your Thursday morning. Plenty of action taking place in the Australian Open. And the man who joins us every morning throughout the tournament is Craig Gabriel. Craig, good morning.
Andrew, morning. And I've seen parts of Melbourne that I had seen before but didn't need to see on this trip.
Right. More taxi drivers. Jeez. Where did you go? Were you coming from around the Melbourne Park precinct?
No. From near the Flinders Street station.
Yep.
And the studio is on Elizabeth Street.
It's not that hard. You wouldn't have thought.
So I'm just around in that sort of area.
Yep.
So this driver has gone up to Parliament, past the Windsor Hotel.
Right.
And at once I said, "Where are you going?" "You cannot turn on Elizabeth Street." I said, "Yes, you can." So I said to him, I got out, I said, "Next time, don't take somebody on the scenic route. The fare was 13 yesterday. Today it's 20.
Well, there you go. Always is a good man for the station, saving some money, getting the most direct route.
Very thoughtful.
Now, we've had a few conversations this morning about the tennis crowds.
Yep.
And they are the most... The Australian... I don't know what it's like overseas,
yep.
But Australian Open crowds, it's funny because you have the fanatics, and that's sort of not what we get known for, but people associate that with the
And
with
I think they've gone Open. Past their use-by date, but go on.
Thank you. No, that's... I just wanted confirmation on
yep.
that. So we've had another text message here. We're not alone, Bryce. This is the latest text message from Damien. I couldn't agree more re-tennis crowds and the fanatics. Do tennis crowds everywhere act the same? Does everyone laugh when someone drops a towel or takes a catch in the crowd? Or is that uniquely Australian?
No, I can't say I've picked up on that. Where I always find that people start to have a bit of a snigger or a giggle or laugh is when the ball gets stuck in the net on a serve. They think, "That's very funny."
And it's not, really.
No.
The ball's just stuck in the net.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They're easily entertained.
But no, not on that score. I think generally the Australian crowds are pretty good. The New York crowds are shocking.
Are they?
Yeah.
So what? Why? What's different?
You're telling me to shut up? You're telling me to keep quiet? Who are you talking to? Because they just want to make a noise and move because they think they're at a baseball game or something like that. The French crowds and the Italian crowds are impatient, especially the Italian crowds. They start throwing coins on the court.
Really?
Yes.
Jeez.
I mean, in the days of the lira, it didn't matter. It was worth nothing. The French crowds also are not that patient. You know, they hate to have a player question a call or speak to a chair.
Just get on with it. Come on. Yeah, get on with the game.
It's hysterical.
Impatient at the French Open.
Oh, no. You know, they start on with that.
Right.
And... in London, if there's a question, I say, do carry on.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So we're not as bad as we think we are.
No, we're not that bad.
All right.
And the Japanese ones are extremely polite.
Yes, no, I can
very
imagine.
Very polite.
And they'd be on time, everything there.
Oh,
be
yeah,
running
absolutely.
To absolute clockwork. Let's talk about the Aussies. I want to start, apart from Diminor and Barty getting through yesterday, let's talk about Kimberly Birrell.
Yes.
What a fantastic story for her.
Priceless.
World number 240, awarded a wild card. As mentioned, we spoke to her a couple of weeks on the show to discuss her journey, a couple of weeks ago rather on the show, to talk about her journey. And it has been a fantastic one and a young one at that.
Mm.
And for her to beat the Croatian Vekic, that's a big scalp for her.
It is. And it's a seeded scalp.
Yeah.
I mean,
29th.
Yeah, 29th. Okay, not one of the top 16. But the fact is she's playing well enough to have been seeded in the top 32. So that is a huge result. That's going to provide her, I would hope, with a fair amount of confidence and a bank balance cushion. But it was very funny. She said, it'll help at ranking points and all that. She said, "I'll be able to buy a car and not have to share the one car we have with my mother." She picks up $155,000 for this so far. And we'll see what happens. She's got Angie Kerber in the next round.
Yes.
That's a different kettle of fish, a lefty, the experience. But savor this, enjoy this. Don't just think, "Oh, I've got to start thinking about the next match." Yes, of course you do. But this is the biggest moment of your young career. Milk it for everything. Enjoy every moment of this. And that is really a lovely story. When you consider what she's been through, a year off the tour with the right elbow surgery and all that. Very nice.
That was the thing that came out of the interview a couple of weeks ago when we spoke to her, was the struggle that she's had getting her body right at such a young age.
Yes.
I know a lot of tennis players go through it, and it is getting miles into the legs, but she was literally not able to compete for a year.
No, exactly right.
Which is extraordinary.
Absolutely extraordinary. You know, she was born in Germany.
I didn't know that.
Born in, I think, Dusseldorf. Her father was a tennis coach there.
Yep.
And then they moved back to Australia. I think she was about 3 years old, took a position at Pat Cash's academy in Queensland. Then they moved to the academy that he's now managing.
Yep.
And, a lot of close contact with Sam Stosur.
We're also going to talk to Chris Marnie, her other coach from up there in Queensland, a little later on in the show. So looking forward to talking a little bit more about Kimberly Birrell then. What about... We'll chat now about Ash Barty and Alex Dimonor. We might start with Ash Barty.
Yep.
She was fantastic. Straight sets. Almost clinical, what you'd expect from a top 5 or 10 player.
Yeah, absolutely. I was doing the ball-by-ball commentary on that match during for Australian Open Radio. And she went through the first set so comfortably. Just reeling off game after game. She was down a break in the second set, and I think it was 5 games in a row to close out the match. And, she was impressive. Wang Yafan, I think, obviously was suffering nerves and on that big stage, etc. But Ash was superb.
Interesting you say about nerves. Like this, there is a bit of pressure on Ash Barty now, but she seems to be taking it in her stride and performing well. And like Maisie was just saying about a top 10 player, they've got gears. They get challenged and then it's, no, not now, not on this, and they just take off.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's been impressive.
You're saying about nerves and a bit of pressure. I don't think it affects Ash.
Yeah.
She's got that type of personality, that easygoing, it'll be right. Let's get on with it. And this is where she reminds me so much of Yvonne Goolagong. Yvonne and I grew up together, same club, and I've known her a long time, but nothing bothered Yvonne. Yes. Nothing troubled her at all, and that's what I see with Ash Barty.
Mm.
She just takes it in her stride. Yeah, okay, I lost that point, get on with the next one.
She now plays Maria Sakkari from Greece.
One of her good friends.
Round of 32. The thing about Ash, it's almost like her tennis, that relaxed style. From the outside, it's like she's not consumed by tennis. It's a job. She goes to do it. She doesn't stress about it. It doesn't take over her life. Is that a true reflection of her off the court as well?
Yeah, I would say so. And that's where that time away from the sport has helped. When she went off and played cricket. And she's made this very point also, in that if she hadn't done that, if she hadn't just decided it was all getting to her and she needed to get away from it, who knows where she would have been now. In that, not playing at this level, she would have had burnout and probably left the sport for good.
Yeah. Do you think we'll see more people maybe think about taking a break away from the game at a young age? Because she was very good very young and had a lot of hype when she was 16, 17. But it's done her the world of good. Will we see that maybe more, where people take even 3 months off, a short break from the game?
Well, I think players have got to schedule their year and their careers and be smart about it. Konta has commented not that long ago that she's been suffering burnout and said that she needs to, when she starts to feel that, she's got to take breaks from the game. But you know what, Andrew, gets back to the point that I was making a couple of days ago. Do other things. Find other interests. Get that escape from the grind of training on and off the court, gyms, practice, matches. Look for something else that's going to give you an interest, and that was probably, I would say, going to help you enjoy what you're doing, your job, your career, and what you love to do normally, without getting stressed and burnt out with it.
And you had this balance as well, Bryce, when you were playing cricket, because you'd come from a professional background before cricket. So you've had that experience quite similarly to Ash Barty, being away from the game, still playing it obviously at a local level, but that mental refreshment. What does that do?
Well, I think what it does is create this worldly thoughts to what you do. There's more out there than what you're just focusing single-handedly on. And we see a lot of athletes improve when they have children because they just have another focus. They don't get home, sit on the couch and stew about the game that they've just done. Footballers in particular, where there's so much contact and aggression involved. But once they have kids, they have this great balance and they become consistent performers. And look, I think it has to be worldly and to think beyond what you're doing just for a profession, particularly sport. I think that really helps a lot, helps with the mindset. One of the things last night, Alex Dimeneur on Primetime, did he suffer a few nerves there in the middle? Like, it's a challenging game. He looked like he'd shot out of the cannon and had won the first couple of sets, and things just seemed to tighten up for him.
Well, Laaksonen picked things up and threw in a bit of a challenge at that stage. There were a couple of moments where I was thinking, like, Alex, just calm down a little bit. He was getting quite fired up and a bit frustrated with himself.
Yeah.
But, you know, he is such class, and he was able to control that and bring himself back in. And, you know, I liked the way he came back in that final set because he was a breakdown at the beginning of the final set and he worked his way back in. I think it was the first four games or something. It might have been three service breaks or something. So to stay focused on that, I think showed a lot of maturity.
What about the way he uses his emotions? We saw them on show last night, maybe more than most other matches that we've seen him play.
It got tight.
It did, yeah. And do you think that he has... It's almost like he's addressed how to use them in a positive way as well, because through those middle sets, he was able to turn it around in the final set and keep his composure, whereas other players at that same critical point in a match might lose it upstairs.
Well, there was no racket throwing or racket smashing or hitting a ball into the stands or anything like that. Mm. And, I mean, there was some shouting and screaming on his part. I think eventually that helped him relax. He just got rid of some of that frustration by doing that. He was able to come back. And that was a lot of maturity there.
I don't know what Leighton Hewitt's record was overall in five setters, but whenever you were watching Leighton as a supporter, it felt like the longer the match went, the more confidence he had that he was going to win. I get that same feeling with Alex Dimeneur. I don't know whether it's because he's spoken a lot about the fitness, the preseason he's done, the amount of work he's put in. Do you get that feeling with him watching him?
Well, with Hewitt, I think it was a case of a siege mentality.
Yeah.
He was going to, you know, fight it out on everything. And to some degree, yes, I see that in Dimeneur, but I don't think it's like a siege mentality. He's going to keep fighting. It's not that sort of, do I want to say, nasty aggression. There's controlled aggression in there, and I think he's more in tune with what he's actually doing. I just thought he was very mature. He's 19, he's 20 in a few weeks' time, and that is a very good positive sign. To be in a commanding position, lose that control, and then still work back.
The match that I probably was most watched last night was John Millman, who fought back from two sets to love down, saved four match points in the fourth set tiebreaker. He was amazing, but unfortunately just ran out of gas in that last set, and as soon as he lost his serve, wasn't able to break back, unfortunately. How would you describe, what would he be thinking this morning about his 2019 Australian Open?
I think he was asked about what positives, and he said, not really, none. Because he saw he had those chances to do it. And I so wanted him to win. Mm. And it was so close. Yeah, he'll wake up this morning feeling a bit peed off and frustrated and disappointed. But he also is so much like Ash. These things are not going to linger. You know, when he sits back, he'll you know, do an evaluation, and I think he'll find the positives and show how close he went. But what about, I mean, you've got to credit Bautista Agut as well.
Oh, amazing.
I mean, he's been the marathon man of the tournament. Both his first two matches, he's up two sets to love and ends up going five and ends up winning.
I wonder about the mindset too with the tiebreak change.
Yeah.
When you get to the fifth set, at least you know you're only going to be there until six or seven games. I wonder if that would be interesting to talk to the players about that, whether there's a shift anymore, because sometimes it felt like in previous years, they'd set themselves for the fifth set marathon and we were buckling in for a long night. But now knowing that it will finish with a tie break at 6-6.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know. Possibly. But I think also you get into the fifth set and you're really not thinking that far ahead. You're just thinking of trying to get through that and stamp your authority early on with a break, etc., and not have to get into something long and drawn out.
Before we get onto one of the big names going out of the tournament yesterday, we'll just finish on the Aussies. Matty Ebden last night against Rafael Nadal, that was a bridge too far for him to climb, unfortunately. Very tough match against Nadal, and
incredibly,
he was taught a lesson, really, wasn't he?
Yeah, 3-2-2. Yeah. That is a bit of a drubbing.
Yeah,
but I think Rafa must be wondering, what do I do to get away from the Australians?
Yes.
Yeah, he's probably
he's a magnet. Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
He's got three in the first three rounds of the Australian Open. He said yesterday it's a Davis Cup
Absolutely.
It is.
So, yeah, look, that was a good performance from Rafa. I mean, as I think I also said yesterday, Matty Ebden is not going to stop trying. He's going to give it everything he's got. But, yeah, you're right, bridge too far.
Jordan Thompson against Andrea Seppi as well from Italy went down in straight sets.
I thought that would have been a bit tighter. Yeah. I thought that could have been a bit more of a closer contest and pressure on Seppi. But no, Seppi produced the goods.
The two other women who went down yesterday for the Aussies, Zoe Hives and Astra Sharma, losing to Caroline Garcia and Maria Sakkari, respectively. A little bit of the same there, both out in straight sets, but they're both young at the start of their careers.
Very inexperienced.
A lot of work to do.
Yeah. Look, and this is a stepping stone, young, as you say, young, new careers. So they learn from that. There's no two ways. Yeah, so, but never expected to win.
Let's head to one of the big names yesterday who is now out of the competition in Kevin Anderson.
Yeah.
Amazing upset.
That took me by surprise because going into this match, their record was 3-0 to Anderson.
Yeah.
I'm not knocking Tiafoe's game or him as a player, but Kevin has been playing so well that I really thought he would take it to Tiafoe and come through as a winner. And he started well, winning the first set. He was getting treatment on the inner elbow of his right arm a few times. But look, credit to Tiafoe, but I'm disappointed for Kevin.
Tell us about Tiafoe. I don't really know a lot about him as an American.
Yeah, he's the son of immigrants from West Africa, and the father took a job at a tennis club.
Okay.
I think was it the New York area or the Delaware area or something like that? And that's how he got into it. I think originally from Senegal. And he's developed, and the USTA have been watching him and encouraging him and giving him the support. He's been a member of their Davis Cup squad. He was included in the Laver Cup last year. So he won his, I think, first career title last February, March. So he's got the goods. Whether he's going to go all the way, I'm not sure. He could be in that sort of, have a bit of a burst, but in that Jack Sock, John Isner, Sam Querrey level.
Yep. I did find the comments. Jamie Murray spoke yesterday about Andy Murray's farewell from the Australian Open and the dedication video and everything. And he said, I think we need to remember, he still hasn't quite announced his retirement.
He hasn't stopped.
He said he found it quite strange, actually, the reception that he got.
The way Andy had been speaking here.
No, I know, I know. I know.
I mean, but now it's sort of like throwing a cat among the pigeons as to what is he going to do? You know, is he going to bring out a pair of crutches and try to play at Wimbledon? The groundsman won't be happy with that, what?
Well, there was a bit of that... fly the ointment right at the end where he goes, you know, I might be even here next year.
Yes.
And we went, oh, come on, Andy, seriously.
John Farnham.
Yes, exactly. He'll be here again next year. Hopefully he will be because he is great to watch. Now, a few of the Aussies in action today. Alexei Popperin, he takes on Dominic Thiem. This is going to be tough. Melbourne Arena before we get quickly onto that, 1573 Arena, you said it was a drink, isn't it? What drink is it?
I think it's a slight alcoholic beverage from China.
Well, it's thank you. I get that.
Yeah. You see all the Chinese characters around the whole court. I can't. I'm in China a lot, but I can't say I've tried it.
Well, there you go. That's what you'll have to do for us when you're in China this year.
Bring a sample back.
Yeah, a 1573. We won't try it on air, but maybe later in the day. Now, Alexei Popperin takes on Dominic Thiem from Austria, the number 7th seed. This is going to be a tough day for him, but also a chance for him to prove himself on the big stage.
Sure.
How do you think he'll go against Dominic Thiem?
Dominic has certainly improved, but he can also be a little bit dicey mentally if he's coming up against somebody he doesn't know. They could get a little bit of a foot in the door, then things can, you know, start to collapse a little bit for Thiem. He's certainly improved a hell of a lot. But, you know, I'd still say Thiem will get through that, the seventh seed. Papirin will have the crowd support there. I wonder if Leighton Hewitt will be sitting there watching that one. but Papirin is good friends with Alex de Minaur. They were in the Junior Davis Cup team together. So, yeah, I mean, but Thiem, yeah, I'd say straight sets. And maybe a tie break in there.
Okay, and then Alex Bolt, this is probably more of a chance. He plays Gilles Simon from France. He's the 29th seed, so another tough game for Alex Bolt, but a good chance for him as well to hopefully take a set off Gilles Simon.
What do you think of his top deck hairdo?
Oh, not sure about it. That's a very good way of describing it. It's a lot of confidence for a man who's way outside the top rankings, but no.
Yeah, And on the other side, Gilles Simon, the skinniest legs in tennis.
Yes, he does.
I mean, he's just like a couple of bean poles that he's standing on. Nice guy there. Yeah, I'd go with Simon. That I think Bolt could take a set.
Yep.
But I'd go with Simon.
All right, so they're the couple of Aussies in action today. Good luck to both of them, and good luck to you on your taxi ride here tomorrow, Craig.
Okay.
Hopefully you don't do an unexpected tour of Melbourne.
Go by Geelong.
Again, yeah, well, cheers, you'll be sending us.
Nothing wrong with Geelong, by the way, to our listeners from Geelong.
Good morning. After this, we're going to get to the early mail. John Hastings returned. Did he return with some fire yesterday? 2 from 2 for the Big Duke. Bryce, you're still on donuts.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Off the mark. Doesn't matter. It's all right. That next on RSN 927.